Intense travelers. Intense travelers, but it was an interesting topic. The instant inspiration for this evening by Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California. Intensive travelers. So many of us want to walk our spiritual path. We want to walk it with all of the seriousness and all of the intensity that we can. And we feel that it's so important. We feel it's so important to walk that spiritual path and be illumined and feel wonderful about the path and where it's taking us, and we want to feel so joyous about it. And then a situation comes up in our human life that bottles us and shakes our boat, and right away we say, oh hell, oh damn, oh, oh. And when we say, now, you intensely want to walk your spiritual path? Of course I do. That's what I want to do more than anything else in the world. I want to do. Argue. What is the most wonderful way to walk your spiritual path? Be yourself and have fun. Now, today, Sylvia had her article on the table here in front of her, and Inga took her big nose and shoved it into Sylvia's things in front of her face and started reading it. Well, Ingeborg shouldn't have done that. That's just too damn nosy. That's sticking your nose where it doesn't belong. But then Sylvia saw it, and she said, now, just a minute, that's mine. You're not supposed to read it. That's my talk for today. Get your nose out of my stuff. Get your nose out of my stuff. And she tried to be sweet like apple pie about it, but she was very pissed off. And that's not walking your spiritual path with happiness and harmony. If you're going to allow yourself to be pissed off over such simple little things like that, what's going to happen if somebody comes and really says something nasty to you? What if Bill Clinton, whom you all admire so much, were to walk in the room and say, Sylvia, that's an ugly dress you have on. Ingeborg, why don't you wear something that looks halfway decent? Ellen, your color schemes are just lousy. And Dodie, you look like a princess. And everyone would say, my gosh, they've got their wires crossed. Dodie looks like her clothes don't match, and da-da-da-da. Well, you see, if Clinton were to come in and say something like that to you, you would say, oh, Mr. Clinton, thank you. Oh, I'm so glad you noticed. You know, any attention from him is desirable. It's like a child who has no attention from his father, and he starts being obstreperous, starts being a naughty little boy to get attention, and he gets a spanking from his father, and he comes away smiling and so happy, and his brothers and sisters said, what's the matter with you, boy? You know, you some kind of an idiot? He said, well, Dad hasn't given me any attention all week long, and I didn't know whether he loved me or not. Now I know he loves me, because he gave me some attention. He cared enough to give me a spanking. And you think to yourself, my God, what a sick kid. But no, that's what it really is all about. When we need attention from others to make our life feel satisfied and full, we are not intensive spiritual travelers. We are intensive human travelers. We're after the human relationship, the human attitude, the human feelings, the human way of looking at things. And this is okay, but it is not the indication of a spiritual traveler. Dodie and I were talking about something on the way in the car, and at one point we said, if they could have just said, thank you very much. Remember? If they could have just said, if someone said to them, oh, that dress looks terrible on you. Oh, thank you very much. Is there something you want to help me improve it? Is there something you want to help me make it better? And you agree with your adversary quickly, and the adversary has no leg to stand on. Because then he's got to come up and say, okay, no, you really don't look so bad. You know, instantly he's on the line. She's on the line, the adversary. And in fact, you make a friend out of that person who was trying to cut you down. Now, unfortunately, you don't have the wisdom to see this. But when the day comes that you have the wisdom to see this, you still won't practice it. Because then you have to have the humility to practice it. And having the humility to practice agreeing with your adversary quickly is very touchy and very tenuous, very difficult to come by. And it's difficult to come by because if you don't like yourself, you cannot say, oh, thank you for telling me that my dress is all dirty. Thank you for telling me that my zipper is open and this and that and the other thing. Thank you very much for telling me, you know. And no offense, like an innocent child saying, oh, thank you. You say to the little child, you're going to go in and eat dinner now. Brush your pants off. Your mother will think, what kind of a play thing have you been doing out here? So he brushes his pants off with a lick and a promise, and he still looks terrible. But he brushed it off. And he says, is that better? Yeah. What are you going to do? He cared. So he goes in the house. His mother said, where have you been playing? In the mud somewhere? And he says, yeah. And it was wonderful. She says, well, you got it all over you. Oh, no, I brushed most of it off. Yeah, but you still got a lot on you. And, you know, you can't help with such naive honesty, with such straightforwardness. You can't help but love the little tyke, you know. You cannot help but just go along with him. Because he is sincere. He is honest. But we are such intensive travelers that we want to find a pathway that doesn't exist. How can you find the pathway of being yourself and having fun when you don't know what it means to be yourself and have fun? What is it that it would take to make you happy? What is it that it would take to make you feel good? Now, years ago I would have said, my pipe and my slippers, you know? Sitting down and enjoying a family evening, or going over when I was in university, going over to one of the professor's houses and sitting with about four or five others who had been privileged to be able to come to the house and talk to the guy with our pipes and our cigarettes and our cigars and, you know, all that nonsense, and sit there and talk philosophy and share philosophy and live philosophy. What a joy that was. What a delight that was. But you see, there was nobody leading us. The professor was sort of a catalyst, but he wasn't leading us. We came and we say, you know, professor, if everybody is perfect and all is perfect, why does the world look like it looks? And the professor would say to us, now, what makes you think everything is perfect? And so we have to spell out why we think everything is perfect. Now, what makes you think other people think everything is perfect? And then we'd have to spell out that. And then he'd say, now, if everybody thinks everything is perfect, and you think everything is perfect, why is it that you can see anything that's imperfect? And, you know, and he wasn't mean. He said that in the most cold, explanatory way that we would look at it, and there's no judgment. There's no how stupid you are for thinking such a outlandish thought or not being alert to the truth. He didn't say that. He just talked to us and inspired us to come up with great things. Adler was one of them, and Hutchins was another. These were all great thinkers at the University of Chicago. And I had a chance to be there at the time that they were teaching the classes that I was taking. And it was exciting. It was exciting. And I really didn't know that I was having an exciting time. I just thoroughly enjoyed myself. I didn't know that everybody didn't experience this. I thought everybody went to their professors' homes in the evening and sat and round-tabled with them. I thought that everybody had great and deep introspective discussions like this. Little did I realize that there were only a few of us with those professors. There were other professors there too, and I'm sure they had meetings with some of their students. But it was a glorious experience. Why did they invite us? Because we were so naive, because we were so open, because we were intensive in a very gentle way. We cared, but we didn't care so hard that we shut it off. And that is a great part of the learning situation, to share so much that the door is wide open. And then when the wisdom and the joy starts flowing through, you have the ability to recognize it and not say, oh, damn, why did I miss so much? I could have been doing this all my years that I was here, you know? And we don't say that. We give thanks for the moment we began, the moment that we opened the door and began experiencing that joy. Here you all are here at the University of Healing, and people come and go, and we have people on campus for long times and short times, and every one of you say, why didn't I learn that years ago? Why didn't I experience that years ago? Why is it now only? Hey, praise God, it's now at least. And now go on from there and let go of the past. Let go of that nonsensical attitude you had about yourself, of being so serious. Now, I've got to pray. I've got to speak my word. I've got to meditate for so many hours every day. I've got to do these things. You don't have to do any of that. I have time for introspection, time for meditation, time for eating, time for lectures, time, not that you have to do it. And I assure you, you don't do it. I know that. During your meditation time, you may be off sailing down the Pacific, you know? During your introspection time, you may be fooling around with somebody else's God, you know? And it's quite likely, you know, it's quite likely. Because you're God, and you create yourself being interested in some other being as God, you know? And you think, wouldn't they make a wonderful teacher? Wouldn't we love to have Mortimer Adler or Robert Hutchins teaching us, you know, and illumining our mind and sparkling our consciousness? Well, you do. Me. I was there. I'm giving you what they gave. Oh, wouldn't it be great to have Socrates? You do. You have me. Mm-hmm. I study Socrates, and I'm teaching how Socrates teaches. I'm not as brilliant as he is, because he was dealing with people who were extremely brilliant. You will only learn to the degree that you're open to learn. And if you read the writings of Plato, and you read all of the things that are said by the students who are studying with Socrates, you will find they are erudite to the highest degree. They are extremely wise people. Extremely brilliant, extremely intellectual people. They know the philosophical treatise. They know the thinking, the technique and stuff. And is that where you are? You don't have to be. You don't have to be. What did they have to do? They had to cut through all their erudition. They had to cut through their intellectualism. They had to cut through that to come back to the innocent first person present tense positive. They had to let go of all their knowingness and begin to know. You see, their knowingness was so bright, so beautiful, so startling that they were known by their knowingness. And none of them really knew. They knew the art of mathematics, of science, of commerce, of business. They knew the art of philosophy. They knew the art of these things. And they could give it to you right off the top of the cuff. They could be the most brilliant people in the area, the philosophical concept field. But what was it that was missing? Anyone know? One word. Begins with a P, ends with an E. Practice. They didn't put it into practice. They just were on cloud nine with this information. They just talked about it. They talked about it. But they didn't put it into practice. Now, putting it into practice doesn't mean that you have to be a millionaire and you have to have a perfect body, mind, and spirit and all these other things. That comes too. That's good too. But what putting it into practice means is that you are at peace, or you are peace. And you like yourself. And you enjoy all that you create about you. Isn't that simple? You enjoy all that you create about you. And you don't judge what you create about you. You have the self-discipline, self-dedication, self-diligence, self-determination. You have this one-pointedness, untouchability, unpossessed, non-judgmental. You have those wonderful features about you, those virtues. I can tell you right now, if you will read all of the works of Plato, in which he speaks about all of the teachings of Socrates, you will find none of them were down to earth. All of them were erudite. All of them were intellectual. All of them were beautiful. And that's why scientists love them so. And that's why they make their teachings, their thinking, their attitudes the basis of science. But that's not man. You take Marcus Aurelius, and you take his writings and his teachings and his words and his meditations, and you'll find that they touch the very heart of mankind. And they are the foundation upon which Socrates built. But very few people had read Marcus Aurelius. Maybe he wasn't born yet, I don't know. But very few people had read anyone who wrote like that. They'd read Hermes, they'd read many of these early writers, but they didn't write in that particular vein. But to think, are you a bridge builder? Mm-hmm. Are you a bridge builder?
Yes.
Are you a bridge builder? Are you a bridge
yes.
builder? You're idiots.
I know, I thought that when must have been something.
Yeah, no, a bridge builder is somebody who's thinking of somebody else.
Yeah.
A bridge builder is not building a bridge for himself. Yeah. If he builds a bridge for himself, great. But why does he has to get across the river and put the ropes back, and he's got to do this and do that. A bridge builder might be a person who likes to build bridges, period, and that's okay.
Because he wants to go back the same way.
If that's what he's got in mind. But the point is, if he builds it for those who are to follow, then he is not being himself and having fun. You know what being yourself and having fun is? Finding the boulders in the road, finding the obstacles, and dancing over them, leaping over them, taking your hands and coming to a boulder and putting them down on the boulder and springing over the boulder like a child.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you find a boulder on the road, say, oh, let's see if I can hide behind it. Let's see if I can crawl around it. Let's make it a joy. Instead of some terrible obstacle to impede your direction, make it a plaything, as all children do. Children will spend more time going from here to there than their parents, but children get from here to there faster than their parents. You say, well, how can they do that? Well, children spend more time because they're running here and running there and in and out and isn't there, and having a lot of fun, but they always get there before their parents do. Think about it.
Mm-hmm.
They get there because they have made the trip a joyous journey. They have not been so intensive as travelers. Children always ask, where's the next McDonald's? Children always ask, I have to go to the bathroom. And if Pop has any sense, he'll pull the car over and say, go, you know? But I'm a girl. Squat down, go. That's part of the game of life, you know? And if people would do that instead of waiting till they come to a filling station or something like that. They feel uncomfortable, and they feel edgy, and they're irritable, you know. But if you just do what comes naturally and flow with it, is there anything wrong with the human body? Is there anything wrong with having a movement of any kind? No. Well, think of all the mess along the side of the road. Really? In Europe, they do this. When they have to go, they stop and drain and squat. In Africa, they do this. All around the world, they do this, where they are not so possessed by the body. Go to France sometime if you want an interesting experience with the toilets. My goodness. You'd be amazed at how primitive they are, and yet how effective. Because they usually stand over a spot in a hole in the floor and do their thing. There's no toilet paper. There's no special things. They just hold their cheeks apart so they don't dirty them. And then, lo and behold, they go on their way. But, you see, they don't have any negative attitudes about it. They don't have any feelings about it that this is dirty or this is improper or something. That's just the way they're brought up. And we're brought up to be so secretive about this. And so, naturally, the trips with children, you want to find a filling station. You want to find a rest stop. which are usually closed. And you want to find something, you know. So when people find a rest stop that's closed, then they go behind the rest stop and do their duty, you know. And it's part of life. But you see, you smile and you find it humorous, which it is humorous. But what you're missing is that's what it's all about. Being yourself and having fun. Not letting convention, not letting tradition, not letting attitudes of others tie you down, but just having your own free, open, wonderful, fantastic attitude. And that's what it's all about. And that's what this is all about. To be an intensive traveler, you're dead. To be a traveler who is themselves and has fun, you're alive and you're having a good time. And you're in no hurry to get there because you have no idea where you're going. You're just being yourself and having fun. So this is what I suggest to you. Let go of all your desires and your dreams and your goals because they are only done to impress others. Your desire, your dream, and your goal for yourself is to live in peace, to live in harmony, to live in right action, to live in truth, to live in goodness. And what more beautiful, what more wonderful experience could you ever have? I love you.
Thank you.